We get things rolling by getting on the G&M Family Market phone line and welcoming back to the program our friend David Roth from Deadspin and various media outlets that feature the best and the most talented people like him. David, what's going on? You watching a little basketball today?
I'm watching a lot of basketball today, Rich. I was telling Carrie that I'm like actually stressed out by it. And this is the happiest day of the sporting year for me, but I feel like I've eaten too many donuts.
I know that feeling. It gets worse, too, by like tomorrow night. It's like being in a casino. You lose all track of daytime, nighttime. Right. It's crazy.
Yeah. You emerge on Monday unshowered, unclear on what day it is.
Exactly. I have to tell you, you scared me, though. You know, we love having you on the show, and I always make a few notes because when you're on, we talk about so many different topics, and I want to narrow in on a few of them here. And I wrote myself a note. This was early today, and it was to begin the conversation with you by asking you if you heard about the Japanese dropping bowling balls on cars. And then I get in here this afternoon, and I go to my Twitter machine, and there you are with a story about just that thing on Deadspin.
Yeah, it's an important story, the bowling ball test. Which is something that only the president knows about. It's reserved for just the highest levels of security clearance. Or it's just a guy making things up from a TV commercial that he remembers sort of from 1992. I've been fascinated by it since I read the story last night. And today, it's originally a story from the Washington Post. They got audio of Trump speaking to a bunch of donors in Missouri and just kind of just riffing, just going for it, doing his thing. And one of the things he mentioned was that the Japanese are dropping bowling balls on cars. It's horrible. No one was really clear. I mean, the article had that kind of Ron Howard Arrested Development narrator voice that you need sometimes in Trump stories where he'll say something and then there'll be like a sort of a parenthetical bit afterwards saying this is not factually accurate. And in this case, the sentence after it was just, it was unclear what he was talking about. And apparently he brings it up all the time. Josh Jossie, who's one of the three people on that byline, mentioned that he apparently constantly is bringing it up in meetings. He's very concerned about the bowling balls and the Japanese. And I don't understand what it is. I was guessing at it. And it's hard to try to think like Trump. It's like the risk that William Peterson's character faces in Manhunter, for instance. You can't get too deep into a consciousness that is that foreign from your own. I think, and I'm probably wrong about this, but I think that he's misremembering that Lexus commercial where they roll the ball bearing around on a car.
I think
in his mind, he's just, the ball bearing has gotten progressively larger in his imagination in the 25 years since that commercial was on TV. And now it's not rolling around, being dropped on it. And he does remember that Lexus is made by a Japanese company. And so now it's just a story he tells whenever he gets together with, you know, Greg Norman and a bunch of plastic surgeons that belong to his club. I don't know who he hangs out with. I don't know where he came up with it.
So the ball bearings have just gotten larger and larger, like his hands have in his mind.
Yes. I think that that's how this stuff works for him. I think that everything... I don't believe that he's really fully assimilated the new piece of information in 1994. And so what you're dealing with is what he already had in there. And then he's just constantly kind of painting over it with new and more garish colors, or just like adding more marble to it or whatever. But it's a very strange worldview. And I don't want to understand it all the way. I am fascinated by it just because it's, you'd think that you'd stop being surprised by him at this point, but man, he's adding new pitches to the arsenal every day.
Well, and kind of bragging about the fact that when he met with Justin Trudeau, he was basically just pulling stuff out of his butt, making things up and rolling with it.
That's the best. I love that part, Reese. And this is the part that, I mean, it's one thing to do that. Of course he does that. Everybody knows he does that. It's a real estate developer thing, but it's also a Trump brain thing. But the idea of getting together with a bunch of people that paid like $10,000 to spend the evening with you and being like, I didn't know what I was talking about. It turned out I was right. And then, you know, the Ron Howard narrator is like, he was not right. I kept thinking about the people that paid all that money to sit and eat like a catered chicken dinner while this guy got up there and kind of like mumbled about how strong he is. Kind of like, what were they thinking? Were they, did it seem to them that this was a good deal?
Now, you mentioned David trying to think like he does. Let's go back a little bit. There was a time during, maybe even before the campaign, certainly during the campaign, when you were able to tweet in Trump speak, but has he moved so far down the food chain in terms of his communications that you can't even replicate that now?
It's hard. I think I probably still could. Like, I do it every now and then when I'm writing about him. His cadence I can kind of get because he does a few, you know, he only does a couple of different things. Like, he tends to repeat himself. He'll often say the same sentence three times in a row in slightly different order or with different emphasis, which is an extremely alpha communication move. Everybody agrees on that. The question with a lot of the more Baroque stuff, the bit like the rally that he had in Pennsylvania for Rick Saccone, where he's just kind of like he's up too late and just things are just coming out. That is really like, I feel like I would need to meditate for a long time and maybe fast in order to get to that level.
Now, you're a young guy. You're in great shape, obviously. Are you contemplating?
Rich, where are you getting this information?
I'm trumping as we speak.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Somebody say it.
Are you thinking of joining his Space Force? Because I think you'd be a good candidate.
I'm a huge fan of Starship Troopers. And now that we all live in a Paul Verhoeven movie all the time, I think it would be my honor to go and join the Space Force. I'm doing my part.
We appreciate that. Helping really not just America, but the planet, I think.
Yeah.
We're talking with David Roth of Deadspin here on Downtown. Let's talk a little sports. College basketball, love the NCAA tournament. And yet, there are dark corners of this tournament where a person would be unwise to go. And that would be, apparently, according to you, anywhere near the Providence Friars mascot.
I am so happy to be talking about this because sometime later today, people are going to tune in to watch that game and they think that they're just watching, a decent Big East team with a storied program. And that will be true. Their mascot, this sort of ghoulish, undead friar creature, is horrifying. And I think I knew that it was horrifying because I've been to, you know, Big East tournament games and the mascot is not a new development, but man, the CBS sports writer Matt Norlander tweeted a picture of him on Friday night, and on Saturday I spent a lot longer on the Getty Images photo wire that we use for work just looking up pictures of this mascot, and he is a peach. I mean, just really, I don't even know if it looks cruel. Like, it just looks like some sort of creature from beyond that wants to be released from its service, but it can't, like, not until the Creighton game is over. And so it's just kind of stuck on the sidelines looking miserable.
Did I read correctly, too, that, and this makes it to me even creepier, that he has no name?
He does have a name, apparently.
Oh, okay.
And this is something that I should probably have, I didn't know this at the time of the post, and it's not on the official, the Providence sort of website that they have for him. And I got a number of Providence alums responding to me saying his name is Dom. But I did not. None of those people were like, his name is Dom, and actually, he's not creepy. They were all just like, point of order, the haunted mascot's name is Dom. Thanks for your coverage, which I appreciate.
You do point out, though, that for a long time, you know, they had a mascot-y looking mascot with monks and puppy dogs, right? Dalmatians.
Yeah, it was all. This is what's so amazing about this is it was like a conscious choice. They had actual Dalmatians for a long time, and a guy in a sort of plush monk costume. Then they had a guy in a plush monk costume and a guy in a Dalmatian costume, which they still have. That's Dom's pet. And they do the sidelines together, but it's terrible because in every photo that you see of them, you just want to be like, someone needs to tell this dog that he's being followed, like, by this goblin. And it doesn't. The dog is very cute. A dog mascot costume is really hard to screw up. But yeah, Dom just really adds an element of menace to the equation that is not always salutary. Yeah.
Now, listener, when you're watching that Providence game, try not to steer your vision to the sidelines and get a glimpse of this dead-eyed soul out there.
Uncanny eyes. Yeah, I mean, if you see, I mean, just knowing that he's there should be enough to chill you to the bone. If you actually get to see him, then, you know, it's a treat. They say that if you see him, you have 3 days to live, so that's good news.
That's right. Dom. And don't say his name. Don't say his name three times in a row, whatever you do.
Don't take the risk. He might not be an urban legend.
I implore you. Finally, before we let you go, loved your piece on this absolutely crappy baseball offseason that has been nothing, boring, terrible.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it just seems to me like a wasted opportunity. I mean, like, it's not to say that I'm not excited for the baseball season to start, because of course I am. I mean, I have been every year of my life that I've known what baseball was. It's just something about the way that the offseason worked out. I mean, you know, the guys that were obviously going to get deals did get their deals, you know, Jake Martinez, Yu Darvish. And if they didn't quite get what anyone expected, then they still got, you know, enough money that anybody would be loath to turn it down. But all these one-year make-good deals being given out to the guys, you know, the players who were all-stars, multi-time all-stars, Jonathan Lucroy and Mike Moustakas and Carlos Gonzalez. I mean, it makes sense that teams wouldn't want to overpay those guys, but there's still something about it that just feels wrong. Whether it's actual collusion, which I think clearly a lot of people at this point do believe that it is on the part of the owners, or even if it's not, I mean, it just, at some point, the ill will seems so gratuitous and so obvious that it's crappy to go into opening day with these sorts of vibes. It seems like an unforced error to me.
David Roth of Deadspin, always great to talk with you. David, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the weekend of basketball, and I hope that maybe come Monday you'll post a picture online of you with glassy eyes surrounded by ring-ding rappers and a dazed turtle by your side.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't see the photo, it's only because I haven't been able to get off the couch and get my phone. That's the reality that we're facing, and I'm looking forward to it very much.
We'll understand completely. Thanks, David.
Thanks for having me, man. Have a good one.
David Roth, love having him on the show. There you know why, if you listen.